So good evening, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. I apologize for our lateness. I took a few wrong turns on getting here, but appreciate your patience. I won't take up very much time at all, but just by way of quickly introducing, obviously we're all here because we're very glad to hear a message from Rabbi David Gottlieb, who received his PhD in mathematical logic at Brandeis. So you want to know what that is, you'll have to discuss that with him. And he went on to become a faculty member, a professor of philosophy at Johns Hopkins, and today he is a senior faculty member at Or HaSameach, an accomplished author and a lecturer. He has no doubt helped, I think, guide probably many of us here in our journey and in our path to understand and have a better relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So without any further ado, I would like to call upon Rabbi Gottlieb to give us his share.
I think the announced title was Tshuva, what is it and how to do it? And I'll try to give you some insight into each of those topics. I'd like to start with the Rambam, Hilchos Tshuva. This is Perek Beis. We'll start with Halacha Beis. I know we should start with Halacha Aleph. We'll go back to Halacha Aleph and I'll explain why. The Halacha Beis, the Rambam starts by writing, Umahi HaTshuva. What is Tshuva? You may notice the Vav, Uma. We'll talk about that. But anyway, what is Tshuva? And he defines it. Hushiyaza b'chote cheto, v'yasirenu v'machshavto, v'yigmor b'libo shelo yaseh u'ot. He should abandon his chait, push it out of his thoughts, and resolve in his heart that he will not do it again. This is what's sometimes called Kabbalah La'asit. You mekabel on yourself not to do it. He'll add to that in a second. Then he says, V'chein yisnachem ala ovar. He should regret what he's done in the past. So that's two. Resolving not to do it in the future and regretting what he's done in the past. Now he says, I'm skipping the psukim that he brings this rias. He says, V'yoid alav yodea ta'alumos shlo yoshu l'zeh chet lo'ola. This phrase is problematic to translate. A way in dictionary that you could translate it is Yodea Talumos, he who knows hidden things should testify concerning him that he will never do it again. God should testify that he'll never do it again. The Lech Mishnah on the spot asks the question, if God testifies, it means it won't happen. If it won't happen, it means he doesn't have bechira, doesn't have free will. So we're not saying here that the person's going to lose free will when he does tshuva. So the Lech Mishnah suggests that the word Ya'id should be taken as a transitive verb. He should take HaKadosh Baruch Hu as his aid. V'ha'idoli aidim. I'll take him as my aid. That I'm not going back to that affair. Not that he gives testimony, but I say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're my aid. That's what I'm not going to do. I'll tell you the difference in a moment. So, but that's another clause in the idea of Kabbalah Lasit, resolving not to do it in the future. And then he says, he has to express these ideas that he's resolved in his heart. He has to express them in words. That's vidui. That's confession. Immediately, crucial, the Rambam says nothing about his future behavior. There's nothing about what he actually will do. He says he resolves to change, makes an honest decision. I'm not going back to that behavior anymore. A decision. I take HaKadosh Baruch Hu as my aid, as my witness, and I mean it. As they point out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is called Yodea Talumos, he who knows hidden things. Not Yodea Asidos, he who knows the future. He who knows hidden things. The hidden things are my heart. I'm asking him to be my aid, that I mean it down to the bottom of my heart. I'm not rationalizing, I'm not engaging in self-deception, I really mean it. I have to regret the past, stop rationalizing, stop giving myself excuses, stop pleading extenuating circumstances. No, take responsibility for the failures, honestly, and say vidui, to confess. Nothing is said here about success. Nothing is said here about permanent change. That means when you resolve honestly to change, you've done tshuva. And tshuva means you've erased the past. You erased the past. And if in the future a person fails again in the same area, that does not erase his tshuva. It does not mean the tshuva wasn't real, wasn't genuine. It does not mean that the tshuva was not effective. The tshuva was effective. Temporary tshuva is valid tshuva. That's right on the surface here. And the Michos Chinuch brings a raya from a Gemara. Those who know the Gemara, Haomer, Hariyat Mikudeshesli, Amanash and Yitzhari Gomer, Afil the Rosh Gomer, Suffolk Mikudeshes. Putting in the Suffolk, because that's what Rashi says. He says to a woman, we'll be married, I take you as my wife, on condition that I'm a perfect right, a perfect tzaddik. Even if up until that very moment, he's been perfectly wicked, evil, the din is Suffolk Mikudeshes. Why? Shema, hear her, tshuva belibo. Maybe he had thoughts of tshuva in his heart. Asks the Minchas Chinuch a beautiful question. We're picturing this guy walking up to the chuppah. He's Al Capone. Really? The worst of the worst. Now he says, we'll be married on condition that I'm a tzaddik gomer. And the Gemara's stock is Sovek Begudeshes. Question. How does he behave when he walks out of the chuppah? How does he behave when he walks out of the chuppah? From the Gemara's case and its psak, you can deduce how he behaves. Does he behave like the Chafetz Chaim? For sure not! Because if he behaved like the Chafetz Chaim, the Gemara couldn't paskin Suffolk Mikudeshes, Shema Hira Tshuva Belibo. The Gemara should have paskin Barei Mikudeshes. Because he now behaves like the Chafetz Chaim, so of course he's a tzaddik gomer. No, he has to continue to behave like Al Capone. And then the Gemara says, okay, it's Al Capone walking up to the chuppah. It's Al Capone walking out to the chuppah. But Shema, hear her tshuva believo. Maybe he had hirure tshuva, thoughts of tshuva in his heart when he was standing under the chuppah. So what? If he had hirure tshuva standing under the chuppah, he was a tzaddik gomer under the chuppah. And then he lost it when he walked out from the chuppah. From this, the Minchas Chinuch proves that temporary tshuva is valid tshuva. I don't have to tell you how important this is. Most of you are, you know, my age, but you're not youngsters either, not babies. And you've been through a lot of Yom Kippurs. And sometimes it can be depressing. I'm clapping Al Chet this Yom Kippur for the same Avera that I clapped last year and 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 20 years ago. I'm hopeless. I'm lost. It's just worthless. It's an empty exercise. Not true, for various reasons, as we'll see. But one reason we have right away, because if at the moment you mean it, if at the moment it's sincere, if at the moment you're expressing your deepest feelings, then if in January or in March you go to pieces, that does not wipe out the tshuva that you did. The temporary tshuva is a valid tshuva. Now, let's just stop to notice that the three conditions are independent of one another, at least in a certain sense. You're supposed to regret the past. To regret it sincerely, yes, I know it's wrong, I'm not making excuses. Does that mean I'm going to be makabel on myself not to do it in the future? Maybe not. Maybe I think I can't handle it. Or maybe I think I could handle this, but I have 7 other things that I have to handle, and I can't handle all of them, and this one has to be put lower down on my priorities. A person can honestly confess that what he's been doing is wrong, and yet it doesn't imply that he will be mekabel on himself to change. Vice versa, a person can be mekabel to change, easy, because although it was fun up until now, it's too fattening, or it's too dangerous, or it now became illegal. I don't regret doing it in the past. It was great. Just I'm not doing it in the future. Neither of these implies the other. And the two of them together don't imply that you're going to say anything, make a vidui, speak it out in words. You could make these resolutions in your heart and not speak it out in words. So we have three conditions, and all three are necessary for tshuva. Now, if I would ask you, intuitively, are the three conditions of equal weight, equal importance? Honestly, recognizing the mistake, putting aside rationalizations, realizing what's wrong, that's very important. As long as a person's kidding himself and rationalizing, so he's not coming to grips with reality. Kabbalah lawsuit, resolving to change my life, to make myself into a better person, that's very important. Vidui, you do say it, you don't say it, you express it in words, don't express it in words, is that very important? That very central, fundamental. For most people, it's hard to understand even why it's a necessary condition altogether. It's very interesting that the Rambam and others derive the entire institution of tshuva from a pasuk in the Torah that describes vidui. Vizvadu eschatosu masher osu. The whole thing is derived from vidui. It's the tail wagging the dog. It's the least important element being the source of the whole institution. Now you could get out of it with a kind of mathematical trick. You have to say vidui. Well, the words you say should be true, shouldn't they? You shouldn't be lying or play-acting. And then the words that you say I regret, so that means you have to regret. You're saying I won't do it in the future, so you have to come out kabbalah osid. So of course, a true vidui includes the other two. But still, it's the tail wagging the dog. It's the least important element. I think there's a very profound message here. Let's reflect that recognizing that something's wrong, evaluating it and condemning it, and deciding to change, both of those can be done by an atheist. An atheist can have values, and he can evaluate himself and condemn himself for doing something wrong. An atheist can say, I don't want to be like that anymore, I want to change it, I want to improve. Nothing in regretting the past and being mekabel to change in the future implies any religious performance at all. Only in vidui is a connection to a Kodesh Baruch Hu implied. Vidui, I stand before the Ribbono Shel Olam, we understand vidui is not to another person. That's being mevakesh slicha on others is a different issue. Vidui is to Kodesh Baruch Hu. In vidui, I say, Chatosi lefanecha. I've sinned before you. I've sinned because I violated your rotzon. It defines what the chait is. The chait is that I violated your rotzon and I distanced myself from you. In the vidui, the religious essence of chait is expressed, and the religious essence of tshuva is expressed. That could be why it is the basis of the entire institution, and that's something that we have to take into account and understand what we're doing when we're doing tshuva. Now, let's take a look at Halacha Aleph. We've now defined what tshuva is. Halacha Aleph starts, Ezohi tshuva gemura. What is complete tshuva? By the way, a person with a taste for logic says, what kind of presentation is this? You start with what is complete tshuva. I don't even know what tshuva is yet. You didn't define tshuva yet. Wait, I'll get to it in the halacha base. In the meantime, let's talk about what complete tshuva is. Is that an orderly presentation? Wouldn't it make sense to define what tshuva is, so I know what you're talking about, and then talk about extended versions, ramified versions, aggrandized versions, talk about complete tshuva? No, start with the complete tshuva, and then halacha base, and he says, umahiya tshuva, and what is this tshuva that I've been talking about for a whole lot already? It's very funny, the Rambam was a very systematic person. What is tshuva gemura? Ze shebol yodo dober she'overbo ve'efshir biyodo la'asos u'perish v'lo osa v'pnei tshuva lo mi'ir v'lo mi'kishlon koach. Tshuva gemura means he's confronted by the very same conditions in which he failed, and he still wants it, he still desires it, he's still strong enough to do it, he's not afraid of anything. This time he refrains, this time he holds himself back because of his desire to do tshuva. not for any other reason, just because he wants to do tshuva. That's complete tshuva. Halacha base is, what is tshuva? Something else that's not apparently tshuva gemura, whatever that is. So we have two questions. What is exactly the difference between plain, ordinary garden variety tshuva of halacha base, which I described to you, the three components, and complete tshuva? And second, why does he put it in this peculiar order? And here's a second crucial insight into tshuva. What would you say about a case like this? Fred lives in Auckland, Australia. Auckland, New Zealand. And Fred's a nice guy. Reasonable person. Reasonable neighbor. But there's one person up with whom Fred cannot put. Mr. X. When Fred gets together with Mr. X, he goes to pieces. He becomes abusive and aggressive and angry and insulting. And he berates himself. Why am I like this? What's the matter with me? It's not right. Next time he knows he's going to be together with Mr. X, Fred says, this time I'm going to hold on to myself. I'm going to have control. And he goes to pieces until finally he can't stand it anymore. And Fred moves to Reykjavik, Iceland. So, Hashem, there's no Mr. X there. Everything's fine. Wonderful. Until he reads in the Reykjavik Times that Mr. X is moving to Iceland. So Fred moves to Los Angeles. He just stays out of Mr. X's way. Has Fred done tshuva? Many people's intuition balk at this idea. It's kind of too cheap. Not facing the real problem. But there's a great virtue in having a definition, because when you want to know whether a concept applies, you look at the definition and see whether it works. So let's take a look. Has Fred regretted his past failures? You bet. He's horrified about what he did, and he's taken very extreme measures to try to avoid it. He certainly sincerely regrets what he has done. Has he resolved to make sure it doesn't happen again? You bet. He moved from New Zealand to Iceland. Iceland, worst of all, to Los Angeles. I mean, so he has regretted the past and he's resolved to change the future. And we might just as well throw in confession. That's vidui. That doesn't change the case. According to the definition, Fred has done tshuva. I call this strategic tshuva. I'm not supposed to repeat the failure. I've created a strategy by which I'm going to avoid that failure. How am I going to avoid it? I'm going to avoid the conditions that cause me to fail. I'm going to rearrange my life so that I don't confront those conditions, and that way I will not fail. I'm taking responsibility for my behavior. I know the behavior is wrong, and I'm making sure that I'm not going to repeat it. Shlomo Salanter defines Chochmas Chaim, life wisdom, as staying out of compromising situations. Staying out of tempting situations. That's called life wisdom. That's valid tshuva. And it earns all the benefits of tshuva. All the errors are wiped out. Still, when I asked, has he done tshuva? And many heads went like this. I hear your sentiment. It's too cheap. He's getting off too easy. Shouldn't he reform himself? Shouldn't he become a better person? Shouldn't he elevate himself to the point where he could make a friendship with Mr. X instead of just running away from him? Sure, that's tshuva gemura. That's tshuva gemura. In the same conditions, the same place, the same circumstances, the same desires, the same strength, same temptation, and this time succeeding in overcoming it. That's tshuva gemura. That's more than just tshuva, more than tshuva which is valid, for which you get credit. It's another step. It's changing your character, changing your motivation to the point where you're immune to the temptation. Not that you're smart enough to run away from the temptation, but you're immune to the temptation. Now the truth is, in psychological terms, very, very often it's a process. If you think about what's very commonly known about addiction, if you're dealing with an addict who's in the grips of succumbing to the addiction, you can't just tell him, well, get a grip on yourself, stop doing it. Sometimes you need a detoxification circumstance. You have to be put in a circumstance where the addictive behavior or substance is not available. after months of detoxification that he can undergo some kind of therapy, and then he can get to the point where he's able to resist. But in the grips of living the addiction, it may just be impossible for him to get control. Here you would use strategic tshuva first, get out of the circumstances, and then work on building up your immunity so that if Hashkacha Pratis puts you back in those circumstances, you will in fact succeed in resisting the circumstances. So as a procedure, it could work very well. Start with regular tshuva, which I call strategic tshuva, and then graduate gradually to complete tshuva. Why is the Rambam put complete tshuva first? Because there are two different ways to think about how regular and complete tshuva are related, and I think the Rambam wants to tell us which one is right. Let me give you a school analogy. One way to think of it is this. Tshuva is like getting 100 on an exam. Now, you're American, so you know there are cases where teachers offer extra credit, and you can get 120 on an exam. So tshuva would be 100, and tshuva gemura would be 120, extra credit. 100 is a perfect grade on all the required questions. The student gets 100, very happy, proud. There's more that could be done. You can get something extra. One possibility. The other possibility is that ordinary tshuva is 66. You just pass. Below that, you fail. And tshuva gemura is 100. That means, tshuva means you pass and you get credit, but there's a hole in your performance. Your performance is not complete, and it's missing, and it's deficient. It's Kilo Kodesh Baruch Hu, and his Rachamim says, I'll let you pass with even a deficient performance. But it's deficient. And the goal ought to be Tshuva Gemura. Tshuva Gemura ought to be the standard. Ordinary Tshuva is substandard, but passes anyway. And that's the truth. That's why the Rambam puts Tshuva Gemura first, because that's the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to do tshuva gemura. The mitzvah is to reform your character, change your psychology, change your motivation to the point where you become immune to those tempting circumstances. Just if you've done the job of avoiding the behavior and done it strategically, you get credit. But you should know that succeeding in strategic tshuva, in minimal tshuva, should be a step on a process to complete tshuva. Not simply, I got 100 already, I'm not in the mood for extra credit, so I don't have to bother myself. No, it should be a step on the way to tshuva gemura. Now, the idea that temporary tshuva is valid is something which is enshrined in some of our vocabulary. So I want to mention a few pieces of vocabulary that you all know, just to have you give you a reference point for it, so that when you daven and when you hear these things, you remind yourself that temporary tshuva is certainly valid. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam, pasuk in Mishlei. The tzadik falls seven times and gets up. We ought to wonder, if he fell seven times, why are you calling him a tzadik? Answer: because he gets up. Doesn't make any difference how many times you fall. Sheva is one of those numbers. You know, it's a round, complete number. It's all the days of the week and all the days of the Yom Tovim. Sheva is a really full number. The tzaddik falls seven times. Why is the tzaddik? Because he still gets up. He's not condemned because he fell seven times. The bracha says, Hanun ha-marbe l'sloach. Marbe l'sloach. Marbe is a word, is an expression which can modify either a count noun or a mass noun or a count verb or a mass verb. Much, much, much forgiveness. Where's the much? How does the much express itself? Tanya says, he forgives over and over again for the same avera over and over again. Doesn't run out of patience. Doesn't run out of leniency. Say, 13 times, that's finished. You know, not looking at you anymore. Not interested in you anymore. 13 times, could be 30 times. You do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is marbe l'sloach. And it goes even further than that. I don't know if you've heard this this analogy of the Bali Musar. They say, if you want to know whether a fish is alive or dead, go to a moving stream, a flowing stream, and throw it into the water. If it goes upstream, it's alive, swimming upstream. If it goes downstream, it could very well just be floating with the current. If it goes downstream, it's dead. The idea is, you have to be fighting. It's moving, move up or move down. I want to add another clause. Suppose you throw it into the moving stream, and it doesn't go upstream or downstream. It remains where it is. Is it alive or dead? It's got to be alive. Because if it were dead, it'd be flowing downstream with the current. It's fighting to stay where it is against the current. That's also alive. That's also alive. You don't measure life by the external achievement. You measure life by the effort. And the Sivas Shalom, the Shalom Rebbe Zatzal, says, as long as you're fighting, you're spiritually alive. As long as you're fighting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on your side, and he takes pleasure in your effort. You don't give up and say, I haven't reached a new level in my performance, and therefore I'm a failure. No, if you're still fighting, if you haven't made your peace with your failure, if you haven't given up, then you're still spiritually alive. And that's something which one can get credit for on Yom Kippur. Now, we've introduced the idea that tshuva is a process. Start with ordinary tshuva and try to graduate to complete tshuva. I want to move the process now back down in the other direction, to more minimal. What about partial tshuva? What about partial tshuva? I have a problem area. I have widespread failure in that problem area. I could handle part. I don't think I could handle the whole thing. Is that right? Is it reasonable? Does it count? Let me give you some examples. You're all aware of these projects where people are sick, or there's a tzibur need, and people divide up hours of Lashon Hara. Right? Certain hours of the day, each person takes 2 hours. During those 2 hours, no Lashon Hara. That's a wonderful thing, wonderful project. The whole day is covered by the community many times. That there's every hour of the day, there are people who resolve not to speak Lashon Hara. I suppose someone said, what is this exactly? Lashon Hara is an Aveira, right? A really bad Aveira? So what do you mean that during these 2 hours, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara, but what? The rest of the time? My 2 hours from 2 to 4. I get a call at 3:30. Did you hear about Philip? Oh, yeah. Call me back at 4:15, because my hours are up at 4:15. See, so we can talk about it at 4:15. I just can't do it from 2 to 4 because I committed myself not to do. What kind of a joke is this? Is this serious? We're talking about Lashon Hara, so it's machmir the whole world. Is this serious? Is this meaningful? Is this significant? We had a student in Or Sameach 10 years ago from Michigan State University. Came for summer program for 6 weeks. First time in his life he ever saw Shabbos. End of the 6 weeks, he says to me, Shabbos is beautiful, it's inspiring, but I'm going back to Michigan State University, and I want you to know the number one priority at Michigan State University is football. And number two is football, number three is football, number four is parties, and studies is 8 or 9. That's the way it is at Michigan State University. And he tells me, Saturday afternoon there are football games, don't talk to me about football. That's off limits. But on the other hand, Shabbos is wonderful and inspiring and so on and so on. What should I do? That's what the rabbi is for, to adjudicate football versus Shabbos. So I said to him, keep Friday night. There are no football games on Friday night. Keep Friday night. Now, this is crucial. Shabbos is 25 hours, period. That's what Shabbos is. Not 24 and 59 minutes, but 25 hours. The whole thing. None of this. Poor Rav Moshe Lavin, you know, if only he had known about football, then he could have made an exception. What can we do? You know, it's 20th century stuff. That's intellectual suicide. Shabbos is 25 hours, period. But if you can't keep 25 hours, then you should keep 12 hours. Don't change the definition of Shabbos. That's intellectual suicide. But say, I can't do the whole thing, so I'll do part of the thing. How many times have I heard people say, kashrus? I think it's important. I think it's important. It's a value. It's something meaningful. I could do it at home. I control my diet at home. But at my work, at my university, social life, I can't bring a tuna fish sandwich to, you know, the high class club. So, I'm not going to keep kosher at work and at university and my social life. I'm not going to do that. Now, to keep kosher at home and eat non-kosher outside, isn't that hypocrisy? If you believe in kashrus, then you do it. If you're not going to do it 100%, then you're just a hypocrite. I'm waiting until I have the strength to make a 100% break with trade food. In the meantime, I'm not going to do halfway measures. This is all a gigantic mistake. It's all a gigantic mistake. First of all, if you keep kosher at home, 60% of your bites of food will be kosher bites. Why throw out the 60% because you can't get the other 40%? Would you do that in health? Would you do that with money? Would you do that with your children or yourself? Of course not. Grab what you can get. Your life is better. Second of all, as we said in the case of moving from strategic tshuva to tshuva gemurah, it may be that the only way you'll get to 100% is by starting with 60%. If you make your home kosher, and you invest in the food, and learning the diet, and learning how to care for the dishes and all the rest, it becomes part of your identity, it becomes part of your life, part of your commitment, part of your habits, and that gives you much more strength to be able to make the break at work, at university, and at play. So that this is the strategy by which you can come eventually to complete tshuva. But what about the hypocrisy charge? Is it hypocritical to say, I believe in something and yet not live up to it? Surely not. Surely not. A hypocrite is a person who says he believes in something and doesn't try to live up to it. He's blasé, as our friends, the French, say. He's completely lackadaisical about it. Sure, I believe in it, but I don't make any efforts. That's a hypocrite. That's a hypocrite. But a person who says, I believe in X, and I'm trying, I'm working on it, I'm making efforts, and I'm making progress, I just haven't succeeded in mastering it entirely, he's not a hypocrite. The person who says, I can't face kashrus in the public sphere, I can't face it, I just can't do it. But I can do it at home, and I'm doing everything that I can. That person has done tshuva. For his level, he's done tshuva because the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't ask you to do more than you can do. He will not hold you responsible for failure if you did everything that you can do. And if in truth he can't face the public challenge, and that may very well be the case. I don't know how many of you are Baal Teshuva, how many had this experience. But all of us who are Baal Teshuva, every one of us had this experience. You're in Grand Central Station, which for the non-Americans is a big train station. If you're not an American, you can't even imagine how big it is. And it's 6:25 in the afternoon, early spring afternoon, and you think, the sun's going down in 8 minutes and I haven't davened mincha. What am I going to do? Walk over to the wall and start weaving about it. Of course, in Grand Central Station, all sorts of things are happening, but still, I'm a person with a certain amount of dignity, a certain amount of self-respect. I'm going to feel uncomfortable doing that. Kodesh Baruch Hu invented a wonderful invention for that. It's called your cell phone. Take out your cell phone and you make a long distance call. And you stand there and you say mincha to the telephone. Everyone I know has done that. I did it. Now it's a piece of history. I did it when they were telephone booths. You can read about those in your history books. You go in and close the door and make the long distance call. Everyone I know has done that. Now the truth is, eventually you outgrow it. If I had a nickel for every airport in which I put a dollar and fill in and daven, you know, I could pile up a lot of money. But in the meantime, in the beginning, it's very, very hard. So you're doing everything that you're able to do. If that's all you're able to do, you get full credit for tshuva. Same is true with the Lashon Hara. Indeed, one of the strategies of the Yetzer Hara is to say, Lashon Hara is terrible, right? You can't allow yourself Lashon Hara. So the 2-hour mitzvah is ridiculous. Because you know that right after the 2 hours you're going to start talking Lashon Hara again. So it's all a joke. That's how he cripples you. That's how he stagnates you. What you have to say back to him is, I can't handle the whole job. Every word that I'm out, and worse, every word that I hear, I can't even hear Hashem. Take control of that, or oh, I can't do it. If I did that, I wouldn't eat, I wouldn't sleep, I'd be a nervous wreck, you know, I'd need Laura, man, I wouldn't be able to come, I wouldn't be able to function. But 2 hours a day, I can manage. I can force myself, be conscious, put other things on hold or secondary, and do it for 2 hours a day. Then you've done all that you can do. And that is the accomplishment of tshuva under those conditions. So, every mitzvah can be broken down. Every mitzvah can be broken down. The minute you think, I really should do tshuva about X, but X, it's just too big, it's too much. I can handle it. Your reaction needs to be, so how can I take 50% of X? Or 20% of X? Or 5% of X? We deal with Baal Teshuva. One of the biggest traumas for Baal Teshuva is to look at a sitter. I remember when I first picked up a sitter, I made a calculation. If I'll go through chakras, it'll take me from 7 a.m. till 3 p.m. And I'll do mincha from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And I'll do Meir from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. That'll be my day. What am I supposed to do? The answer is, tell us how many minutes you can daven. 11 will show you what to say for 11 minutes. And that's where you start. 13? 6 will show you what to say for 6 minutes. Start with your capacity and use that to determine what you should do, not the other way around. So, this is an absolutely crucial technique. Technique is to break up the project for tshuva into manageable pieces and to use that as your stepping stone. Some of you have heard of behavioral therapy and behavior contracts. It's exactly what we're talking about. You guarantee that each step will be a success, and then that success gives you the reinforcement to build on it and to have a continuous succession of successes. Now, there's an objection to this idea. Very, very important to get straight about this. The Rambam writes, Hilchos Tshuva, that because we have free will, everyone could be as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. Big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. So what am I talking about? Limits and abilities and 2 hours a day? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have a 2 hour a day mitzvah, not to talk Lashon Hara. Everyone could be as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. Furthermore, aren't we told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the strength and the ability to pass every test? Yes, we are. So if we give the strength and the ability to pass every test, then it seems like we have the ability to be perfect, or as close to perfect as Moshe Rabbeinu was. So why am I talking about limitations and step by step and dividing mitzvahs into pieces? The answer is that the quotation from the Rambam is not being understood correctly. And the correct understanding supports what I have told you. Rav Hanan Wasserman has a ma'amar, an essay, in which he says the following words. The Rambam says that we can each be as big a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. If I, Rav Hanan Wasserman, would serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu with all my strength for 1,000 years, I would not come up to Moses' ankles. So what does the Rambam mean? The Rambam means that just as Moshe Rabbeinu served the Kodesh Baruch Hu with all his strength, so I too can serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu with all my strength. And all my strength is all I have. Everything else is a gift from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. My abilities are a gift. My success and failure are both reactions by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. All I have is my strength. What qualifies you as a tzaddik is the fact that you did everything you could do. Anything that's beyond what you could do is onus. Does not take away from your spiritual standing one whit. Of course, since the Kodesh Baruch Hu invested in Moshe Rabbeinu gigantic capabilities that I don't have, my production, my performance will not be equal to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's not what the Rambam says. He doesn't say you could be as Kodosh, as Tohor, as big a Novi, as big a Yodea Tohor, or bring Torah from Shemayim. He only says Tzadik. Tzadik means you do everything in the best way that you can possibly do it, and you qualify as a Tzadik. Everything else beyond that is onus. Famous Rebbe Reb Zusha said, when I come to Shemayim and they ask me, Zusha, why weren't you Avraham Avinu? I have a very good answer. Because you didn't create me as Avraham Avinu. You didn't give me his abilities, his kochos. Why weren't you Moshe Rabbeinu? Why weren't you David HaMelech? How the same answer. But when they say to me, Zusha, why weren't you Zusha? That I won't have an answer. Why didn't you use your abilities, your strengths, in the best possible way? Then I won't have an answer. We are not required to perform the way other people perform. We're only required to make a 100% effort. The Vilna Gaon learned 16 hours a day on a bad day. A better day would be 18 hours a day. If I learn 4 hours without losing concentration, I'm a success. I feel I'm a success. Should I redefine myself as a failure? Why did I do what the Vilna Gaon did? That's not my job. That's not my job. That's not what the Kodesh Baruch Hu asks of me. If I learned with all the attention that I can muster, then I've done my job. Now, what about the statement that we're given the ability to pass every test? That's true. But the implication of that statement has to be turned around 180 degrees. Because, here's the key, not every obstacle is a test. Not every obstacle is a test. Indeed, only the obstacle for which you have the strength to overcome is a test. An obstacle that you don't have the strength to overcome isn't a test. Not every obstacle standing in your path is a test. There are some things that are in your path that are stopping your progress, that make it blocking your road of progress. And it is not your test to remove them, because you can't. They are beyond your ability. So it's not a test. You use the statement, I'm given the ability to pass every test, to identify which are tests and which aren't tests. And in that way, you pay your attention to the obstacles that you have strength to overcome, and not to the ones that you don't have the strength to overcome. This is very, very important indeed. When you're facing an obstacle that you can't overcome, the test then becomes to live with your inability to overcome it. And every one of us, I would say almost every one of us in this room, has gone through that multiple times, dealing with your children. Because there are times when the child is facing a difficulty, some kind of problem, and you as the parent know what the child needs. You know very well what the child needs. And you know that you have it. You have the key for the child. The only trouble is, the child can't take it from you. The child can't receive it from you. And that's horrible for a parent. My child is suffering, and I know how to solve it, and my child just can't take it from me. That's what happens when children grow up. That happens at certain ages, certain types of relationships. The child can't take it from me. Then the test is not superhumanly to still give it to the child. He can't take it from me. The test then is to live with myself with that inability. Not to condemn myself. Not to give up hope in myself. Not to give up hope in my projects and my own progress. Furthermore, in such a case, by the way, the way to handle it is to recruit somebody else to give it to the child. Find some other relative, find a teacher, find a friend, tell the other person what the child needs, and hope that through this indirect channel you can help the child. But instead of falling into despair, I'm not doing what I should, the refrain that you hear from parents is, but I'm his father, or I'm his mother. And the implication is, so I have to do it, I should do it, it's my job to do it. Answer, if you can't do it, then it's not your job. And you have to be honest enough to admit that you can't do it, and then get somebody else to do the job. That's what it means to be facing an obstacle that you can't overcome. When you can't overcome it, it's not a test. We're certainly not given the guarantee that we can overcome every obstacle. Only given the guarantee that we can pass every test. And we use our abilities to determine which obstacles are tests and which obstacles are not tests. This picture of tshuva that I'm describing to you, I was a chassid of the Boston Rebbe Zatzal for 47 years, and I picked it up from him, and I picked up most of the sources from him, the ideas from him. And one time, I played it back to him, and I said, I think this is what you're teaching, I think this is what you stand for, what you believe in, I just want to make sure that I'm getting it right. And he said to me, you got it right, with one exception. The tshuva that you are describing is the tshuva all year long. But then there's Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur has a different dynamic, and that time the goal has to be perfect. The goal is to be perfect for those 10 days. Of course! We take it for granted that by February, we're going to erode from that position. But after all, if you are always taking small steps, and you are accumulating them, and you're building on that, do you know whether you're doing the most that you can? How would you know? Maybe you're being too lax on yourself. Maybe you could really make faster progress. There has to be a periodic attempt to do more to see what your strengths are. So once a year, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm giving you a great gift. 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Shabbos Shuvah, which often is the third day in the ten, and Yom Kippur, 3 or 4 days of Kodesh, and Shofar, and Slichos, and Tilum. I'm giving you a whole environment which should awaken you and should inspire you. During that special time, try to be perfect. For those 10 days, try to be perfect. And then, as the year wears on, you will definitely slip backwards. But you can't predict how far you'll slip back. Without that experiment, you don't know how far you'll slip back. Chances are you'll slip back, but not all the way back to where you were, Rosh Chodesh Elul. And that being the case, you'll have picked up a residue of advancement that you wouldn't otherwise have had. So Tshuva now becomes a kind of two-pronged project. There's the whole year, except for Aseres Metshuva, and there's the Aseres Metshuva, which had that special dynamic. And that's the way one should approach that period of time. I want to make two more remarks, and then I'll be happy to take questions. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tshuva and in Perashat Mishnayos, he spells it out in more detail. There are only two types of actions for which a person needs to do tshuva. Something he did with mezid. Mezid means I knew very well that it was wrong. And I know that I could have controlled myself, and I didn't. I chose to do the wrong thing. That's amazing. Then there's shogeg. Shogeg means I didn't know, but truth be told, I should have known. I knew it was questionable. I knew it was borderline. I knew that there are other things that are similar that really aren't right. I should have investigated to find out. I was ignorant, but I was negligently ignorant. I was negligent and responsible for my ignorance. That's called shogeg. It's not as bad as mezid, but it's bad. It's wrong. And a person is guilty. Guilty for not exploring and achieving their right understanding. And he has to do tshuva for that. That's it. Deliberate, chosen, and negligent. Anything that doesn't fit into those two categories, a person does not have to do tshuva for because he's not responsible for the action. And that includes cases where the person didn't know and frankly wasn't negligent, wasn't lazy, wasn't sloppy, wasn't irresponsible. He just didn't know. This applies in spades to Baalei Tshuva. I'm asked very often, a fresh Baalei Tshuva says, I'm 19. Rabbi, if you multiply 52 times 18, you know, times 13 to 19, 6 years, that's a lot of Shabbosos I didn't keep. How am I going to do tshuva for all those Shabbosos? Usually the right answer is, you don't do tshuva at all. Because you didn't have a clue. And you didn't have any reason to have a clue. Ah, you'll tell me that there are religious people around? Sure, I remember growing up. I knew about religious people. Backward, ignorant, superstitious, you know, people who are beggars, don't have good professions. That was the propaganda they fed us in American reform, and therefore, why should I take that seriously? I even know one fellow from Pittsburgh who was in, he's at a conservative synagogue in a Sunday school class, and they brought in a woman who was introduced to the class as an Orthodox woman. So this boy said, he was about 11, he said, I heard that there are strings that people put, the Torah says, by putting on your garments. What is that? She says, oh yes, they're called tzitzis. Nobody does that anymore. That's what she told them. Can you blame him if he just doesn't pay attention to it anymore? Someone who was told it's Orthodox said, nobody does that anymore. So, finished. Closed book. Shall he say why I was guilty of not putting on tzitzis on my scarf, which is a big scarf that covers half the body? Shulchan Aruch talks about that. Certainly not. So for the vast majority of things that people do before they do tshuva, they're not responsible. It's not mazik and it's not shogeg. It's something which falls into the honest category, and therefore the question of doing tshuva doesn't arise. It only arises for things which you knew, you had control over, and or you didn't know but you were negligent in your ignorance. The other thing I want to tell you is this. We're saying the Dovid Hashem Oiri. There's a phrase there which I think is not widely understood, and it's a very telling phrase. L'cho Omar Libi Bakshu Fonai. L'cho Omar Libi Bakshu Fonai. To you, singular, my heart said, Bakshu, plural, seek out my face. Who's talking to whom? What's the message? What exactly is going on? If you look at Rashi, the art school gets the translation right. If you look at Rashi in Mikras Gedolos, here's what he says. L'cha means b'shvilcha, b'shlichuscha. The Jew is talking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he says, Ribono Shloim, my heart has become your shliach, your agent. Shliach is not a messenger. Shliach is an agent. My heart has become your agent to communicate a message to me. And the message that you're communicating to me and to all of the Jewish people is, Bakshu Fonai, seek out my face. That pasuk is very remarkable because there's another pasuk that we say at least twice a day in the Ficinados, three or four times a day. And also suru there, which is spelled sup sup, does not mean to turn aside. That would be a samach. Also suru, Malbim says, means do not evaluate. Do not evaluate after your heart. Don't trust your heart for your evaluations. Because Baruch Hu was megala his rotzon to us. He gave us a Torah of mitzvos and of values. That's where the evaluations come from. And not which strikes you in your heart and appeals to you in your heart. That means the heart is untrustworthy. And in the Dovid Hashem Ori, David HaMelech says, the heart is a Kodesh Baruch Hu's shliach to give me his message of Bakshu Fonai. I think that's part of the reason why we say this in Elul and Tishrei. Because in Elul and Tishrei, the whole atmosphere is one that permeates the heart and brings the heart in tune with what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants. And during Elul and Tishrei, you can trust the heart. The heart will be much more trustworthy. His evaluations will be much more on the mark. Because the anticipation of Aseres Metshuva and of Sukkot, Tishrei, the greatness of Tishrei, and Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li of Elul, who are reaching out to Kodesh Baruch Hu before the time of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. That's how deep the inspiration goes. It goes even into the heart about which Kriya Shema says, L'Tasu Achrei L'Babacha V'Acharinich. Tshuva is the great gift that Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us. As the Psukim in Yeshaya say, Psukim in the Haftorah for a Tanis Sibur, your thoughts are not my thoughts, your ways are not my ways. When I told you that Tshuva wipes everything clean, it doesn't follow human logic. Correct, because I'm the creator. I created Tshuva. I created your minds that I know you don't understand it. And I'm telling you that I made that part of the precondition of the world. Maram Sochim says seven things were created before the creation of the world. One of them is Shuvah. It means it's a foundation upon which the world stands. Shlomo HaMelech said, Ein Odom Tzadik Ba'oretz Ashiyashto Lo Yechta. There's no person who avoids failure completely. Everyone fails. That's why Shuvah is a pillar of the world, because everyone has to make use of Shuvah. Everyone must make use of Shuvah. So when you go into this period, and you're thinking about doing tshuva, and you're meditating on the places in which we have failed, one should not feel like a failure. There are failed actions, but the person is not a failure. As the Nesiv HaShalom said, as long as you're still fighting, as long as you still care, as long as you're still hoping, you're still spiritually alive, because Baruch Hu believes in all of us, and He will give us the ability to make the steps that we need to make. Okay, now if there are questions, I'd be happy to try to answer. Yeah. The ordinary tshuva is what I would call, that's not bad, it's not succumbing. In other words, being able to stop it in practice, but becoming immune, that's tshuva gemurah. I mean, the Rambam says so. You're in the same conditions, the same psychological state, the same desires, the same strength, same age, and this time you don't do it, and you don't do it just because of tshuva, not because of... Well, I guess maybe now we have to work on the semantics. Immune, I hear now in your question, immune means something like, and not tempted. I meant immune in, I'm sure I'm going to win. But not that I'm not tempted. You mean to get to the point where it doesn't tempt me anymore? That's a big, big issue. Take a look in the Shmona Prokim Perek Vov, and the Rambam discusses this in great detail. But it's quite complicated. Take a look at Shmona Prokim Perek Vov. For some avers, he says yes, for some avers, he said no. And it's different types of avers. It's not a blanket thing. And by the way, I will take questions from this side of the room. If there are women who want to ask questions, I'm happy to do that. Don't read any prejudices into my hat. Yes?
The Pasuk for Vito is the source for Tshuva. Is it also the source for Tshuva Gemara, or is that the mitzvah of the Dhamma Sayyid?
You know, the Rambam doesn't bring a source for the chiyuv of tshuva gemurah. He brings sources for the effect of tshuva gemurah, but he does not bring a pasuk for it. He has the Mishnah in Yuma, and he quotes the Mishnah word for word. He doesn't quote a source. It's a Mishnah. The Mishnah there doesn't quote a source either. The idea of I should add a little point here, but I don't want to leave this as a misimpression. Rambam says that the person has completed tshuva gemurah, he's in the exact same circumstances and succeeds. Does that mean you should put yourself in those circumstances?
Absolutely
not. Indeed, the example that the Rambam gives, quoted from the Mishnah, is one in which it's usher to put yourself in those circumstances. So you want to know how will tshuva gemurah take place? Leave that to the Ribbono Shel Olam. If he wants you to do tshuva gemurah, he'll put you in those circumstances. Your job, like Rosh Salanta said, is avoid the circumstances as best you can. But the chiyuv, so maybe that's part of the answer to your question. There's no chiyuv to go out and do it. It's been achieved when you are immune in the sense of being guaranteed to win the struggle, and because Baruch Hu decides to test you. It would be mechayev you to, but see here, it's a little tricky. Now, look, Rabbeinu Yonah disagrees with the Rambam. Rabbeinu Yonah, before, he says, you need to make yourself immune, but you don't have to undergo the test. The Rambam says you become worse when you actually undergo the test, when it actually happens. Rabbeinu Yonah says simply, fortify yourself to the point that where, if there were a test, you would win. But don't go looking for the test. The Rambam says, don't go looking for the test either. The Rambam says the test has to happen. But anyone says, doesn't that happen? If you are in fact immune, then you've done everything that you need to do. End of story. Frankly, I understand Rabbeinu Yonah better than I understand Rambam. What difference does it make whether that's acted out in practice? Especially since you don't have to go and do it. So since he defines it as being acted out in practice, and since you shouldn't go out and seek it, it'd be hard to say that it's a chiyuv to do it. It's just, that's what happens.
So again, the Rambam doesn't say this. Because he's not kosher that it is until he goes away and digs.
Well, that's something else. That's only those averus where we are chashid that he will not tell the truth. But we're talking about all the averus here. We're talking about cheeseburgers, and we're talking about Shabbos, and we're talking about shatnez and everything else. Yes?
What if you are working on for the character trait? And as often happens, you do get a test, you do pass it, and the next time you fail it.
So this is what we said about temper. Oh yeah, the question is, suppose you're working on character traits, which is a very important part of Avodah, Hilchos Deos and the Rambam, and the first time you get a test, you pass it. And then the next time you get a test, you fail it. So that I would classify as temporary tshuva, and we said temporary tshuva is valid. It's valid. You get credit for having wiped out all the past failures, and the new failure is just a new failure. Let me just add one little point of a little more depth here. What does tshuva mean? Tshuva means people can change. People can really change. A person can really become better. Now listen. if you can really become better, then you can also really become worse, right? You can really change. You can change up and you can change down. So let's say, Yom Kippur is in October, and I resolve, and I regret, and I confess, and so forth and so on. And until February, everything's fine. And then in February, I fail. The right description is, in October, I went up, and in February, I went down. Going down in February doesn't mean I didn't go up in October. They're both real motions. One was up, and one was down. So you get credit for the tshuva that you did, and now you have a new project, working on that area again, to try to recover over again. But it does not wipe out the past performance. Yes?
I'm not sure when you said about obstacles and tests, because especially I think as women, we always push harder. I think we can do more. I think we should be doing more. And how do you really know what you're supposed to put? You push yourself, and when you say, I can't.
Okay. By asking the second part, I think you already have an answer to the first part. You recognize there are limitations. Person says, I have more kavanah in my davening. Okay, so I'm presently davening this one esrei in 6 minutes. I'll take 7 minutes, and I'll think more about it, prepare myself before it, but the test for me is not to take 45 minutes. That's not my test. 45 minutes is extravagant. It's something that I can't do anyhow. I won't be able to sustain it for 45 minutes. So that's not my test. My test is go from 6 to 7. Now you ask, how do I draw the line? How do I know how much to do? So part of the answer is what I said about the Saraswami Tshuva. If you pull out all the stops and do the aim for the top, you get a little bit of a feedback of what you're able to do and what you're not able to do. But there are other techniques as well. What you want to avoid is failure and the disappointment and the sense of frustration and the sense of inability that comes with failure. One way to do it is try the new step as an experiment. I'm doing it for a week. You have to estimate that you can really handle it for a week, for sure. And after a week, I'll reevaluate, and I'll see. And now, this is absolutely crucial. When you reevaluate, you don't evaluate, did I succeed in doing it? You evaluate the sum total of your life over that week. Because it may be that in your enthusiasm for doing it, you succeed in doing it, but other things pay. The price is borne by other places of your life, where you're not focusing. You want a bottom line evaluation. So you say, I'm trying it as an experiment. After a week, I'll reevaluate. If after the week I say it wasn't worth it, I'm not a failure. I performed an experiment and I drew the conclusion. And I'll try it again next year. That's a way to save yourself from the sense of failure and also to experiment with yourself to see what your capacities are. That's one way. And the other way, have some insight into what your capacities are, is to ask somebody else. Because Adam Karvei Salatzmo, we are all prejudiced in our own case, not only positively, we're also prejudiced negatively. We're often too down on ourselves, too self-critical. We compare ourselves with other people and hold ourselves to unrealistic standards. And because it costs me to evaluate myself, and I'm prejudiced about it, if I go to somebody else and ask for help, a friend who knows me, a parent, or a Rav or a Rebbetzin, someone who knows me and whom I can trust, and say, look, I know that this isn't what it should be. Should I do double, triple, quadruple, wait till next year and do nothing? What do you think I'm capable of? That can be a very valuable insight into what you're really capable of and what you aren't. Where to draw the line? I don't know any way to get it 100% right. Indeed, once upon a time when they were the Nevi'im, that's one of the things the Navi was for. When you had a problem like this, you went to a Navi and he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants this from you. And you know what you have to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away Nebuah. That means we have to live with uncertainty. Quoting so-and-so. But you can do the best that you can. Experimenting with yourself is one way, and the other way is to get insight from other people. Yes?
Yeah.
Yes, I'll repeat the question, but I don't know if I can do anything helpful about it. She asks, what happens if you want to make progress, you want to elevate yourself, but the members of your family resent it, and they try to pull you down, and make fun of you, and they criticize you, and they want you to fail. They want you to fail. I can make some general suggestions, but I don't know you, I don't know your family. It could be that what I'll say just won't be relevant to you. So I'm just, you asked, so I'll tell you what I think of. What I'm going to say now applies not only to your case, but to other cases as well. You can say to a person, in a calm moment, a calm interaction, I want you to know that when you do ABC, it hurts me. That's the first step. Just say that. I want you to know that when you do ABC, it hurts me. Leave it at that. Just letting you know that you're hurting. See if that helps. If it doesn't help, then you say, let a week go by. If it doesn't help, you say, look, I told you that when you do this, it hurts me. Why are you hurting me? Why are you doing this? Did I do something to you that you're paying me back for? Which would be low anyway, but still. Have I hurt you in some way? If so, tell me. I don't want to hurt you, and I don't want to be hurt by you either. If those two appeals don't work, then you really have trouble. Then you really have trouble. I think you're appealing to the person's better side, which is always the better appeal. If you condemn somebody and fight with them, he'll be defensive. If you're, what you're really saying is, are you the kind of person that hurts people? Is that what you are? No? You're hurting me. And when you say you're hurting me, the assumption is, I know you don't want to hurt me. You're not the kind of person that's not hurting people. Maybe you weren't aware how much it hurts you. I'm telling you, it hurts me. And try that. Try that and see if that helps. Yeah. I do, yeah. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Oh, good. Very good. Okay. Very good. Okay. Gentlemen and ladies, thank you very much.